Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's June the 7th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dale Durkholz of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the chair of the Senate Committee on Agriculture says a lower payment limit is in the works. And on the House side of that equation of the Farm Bill, the chair of the House Ag Committee says most landowners with fewer than 10 acres are not real farmers, and that they should be excluded from the federal farm programs. It's an interesting comment in light of my visit to Europe last week. Meeting with farm policymakers there, I heard them discuss the need, but the unlikely happening of a small-slash-old farmer buyout of the CAP, that's the Common Agricultural Policy, or Europe's version of the Farm Bill. The idea was simply to buy out the Eastern European bloc of the old farmers and to let capitalism become the order of the day there. Now back to the show. Dave Dickey will bring you details of the aforementioned news stories later in the program, and then we'll hear U of I Ag economist Daryl Good's take on the rally this week to new contract highs in the soybean market. Oh, and don't forget, just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us on this edition of the Closing Market Report to take a look at your agricultural weather forecast.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Taking a look at the numbers now as they finished in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures like this in the wheat pit, July contract at 524 and a half. That finished up 4 3/4. September's at 541 1/4, up 6 3/4. And December wheat futures at 554 1/4 were up 6 3/4 as well. July corn futures 384 3/4, a dime higher. September's at 393 1/2 were up 12 cents, and December contract up 12 1/4 at 393 1/2. July beans 832, a settlement price up 9 3/4. August at 893 3/4, up a dime. And November's at 864 1/2, up 11 cents. July bean meal at 226.20, up 230. July bean oil at 36.36. up 46 for the afternoon. From the Mercantile Exchange, August feeder cattle at 108.85. They were down 92 1/2. Live cattle June contract at 89.67 1/2, down 32 1/2. And the August live cattle down 20 cents at 89.52 1/2. June lean hog futures 25 cents lower at 73.10 for the afternoon. The numbers in the outside markets look like this. For the nearby crude oil, July contract $66.92. The last trade there, 96 cents higher. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 13,335, and it's down just about 131 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dale Durkholz of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dale.
Yeah, good things happened at the board today.
You bet. Good things did happen at the Board of Trade. You know, I'm not sure whether you should be more excited if you're wanting things to go higher about the new contract highs in the beans than all those contracts except for, I think, the August, or that 12-cent rally that happened in the corn market.
You know, it's really kind of interesting. You know, over the last, few weeks here, the corn market really had been somewhat of a follower behind what the wheat and the beans had been doing. It really kind of lost its leadership punch. I think part of that had to do with speculative element in the marketplace, just not having any clear-cut signals to buy the market. So they were just coattailing what they were seeing as buy signals in the wheat and the soybeans themselves. Part of it may also have had something to do, too, with the talks that seemingly been increasing here for the last 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, about the June acreage report could show larger corn plantings yet and smaller soybean plantings. So corn's been kind of relegated to the back seat, but you know, the way it's kind of acted over the last week or so, especially maybe 10 days, the market has gotten a little bit more excited, and for some reason today, to be very blunt, the money crowd wanted to own corn, and that really is the story of the day.
Why?
I think they're still looking at things technically that had been a plus to the marketplace. You know, I watched 20, 50, and 100-day moving averages to try to get some sort of a feel for what the big spec funds are doing in the market, not so much the index funds. They're on a different situation. But the big spec funds, see what they're doing. And we had pushed December corn futures, and I think a lot of them are trading out there now because July's, we're starting to roll the index funds out of July forward, and the thought is those people are going to go all the way to December. But December corn pushed up over the 50-day moving average. It's been up over the 20 here for the last 5 or 6 days. We were down against it last night. There wasn't any follow-through selling early this morning, and they just stepped into the pit and wanted to buy it. And weather forecasts are such at this point that nobody wanted to fight them. And today we ended up closing over the 100-day moving average and actually at a new high of the move again.
Well, we heard at the noon hour today the analyst, Sue Martin, in fact, tell us that she thought maybe a 50-cent move was in the offing for the corn. What do you think?
I think that's a possibility. I think you take it a stage at a time. You know, it's kind of looked here for the last two and a half weeks anyway, like that May low we had right around that May 11th crop report. In fact, might have been the 20-week cycle low. And we'd kind of gotten a little bit more flavor of that with the rally we had late last week, and now today coming out of new highs, it adds a little bit more flavor to it. I think the real key here, though, is the ability to close up over the $4 mark again, which psychologically is probably going to be a key ingredient in this complex. And if we can do that, then I think, yeah, you could start talking about the possibilities of corn going to new highs, and that's really what she's alluding to. I don't think you can discount that. Fundamentally, the key in the key is going to be, are the weather forecasts going to line up to let that happen? You know, that's still always the unknown we got to deal with every day.
Let's talk about the $4 mark just a bit, because in general, over the last couple of 2 or 3 months, most of our analysts will say when corn approaches $4 December futures, that's probably a good time to think about making some cash sales. Is that going to change as excitement builds?
I don't know where they're going to fall in place on that, but I think at this juncture, and when we talk about prices, I look to look at futures because that's universal to everybody. I go back and, you know, I think earlier in the winter you and I had talked at one time on the phone, maybe on the weekend show, about how corn, December corn futures, had never traded over $4 in their history. We had a high back at that in 1974, and we had never eclipsed that. And so, to me, when December corn futures back in February went above the $4 mark, that said maybe we have a little bit different situation coming into play at this juncture. So, you know, I tend to think right now I want to keep my powder dry, because I think the $4, you know, resistance has been eliminated at this particular juncture. In the short term, I see it as a key price level, a key influence. But we get over that on a close, it's going to really tend to confirm to me that that low we had early in May was really the 20-week low, and that paves the way for this thing to continue strong, at least for a short bit.
Will the soy complex continue to make new contract highs?
Yeah, the one thing in history people need to remember about soybeans, when you look back at their long history, we have never spent much time trading between $8 and $9 on soybeans. That includes going up and coming down. Typically, the case has been once you go above $8 prices in soybean futures, that you go somewhere beyond $9. Now, that's happened about 10 times in history. Two times we did stop in the mid-eights. 1979 was one, and I don't remember the other one right off the top of my head, but the way the soybean market continues to move along at this point, I think right now, until proven otherwise, I think I'm going to go with the history that says we probably can continue to move to the upside. And the ability of beans here this week, November and July both, to reach out and close at new contract highs, I think opened that door that said potentially higher prices are ahead yet.
So $9 beans are better, you think, then?
Well, I think that's the kind of number that you got to instill in your mind when you just look back at history at this point, and you kind of keep that in play. You know, as one thing a lot of farmers don't keep up with are the products, and normally when you look at any kind of a move in soybeans, of a big move to the upside, meal has been the key one leading the parade. Twice in history, though, oil has been really the big part of the bull market, 1974 and again in 1984. And interestingly enough, now we have soybean oil prices at the highest level they've been since 1984. And that's the market that really is tightening up quite a bit.
And we did spark a rally in the bean meal as well, finally. It took a while, though.
Well, yeah, we did. But when you look at today, for example, you know, oil rose roughly about a half a limit move on the July contract, and meal was up about 25% of a limit move. So I know which one was the strongest today in a relative sense. Oil was the strongest today, has been the strongest for some time. You know, you go into the world over the last month, palm oil's up something like 20%, coconut oil like 27% over the last year. Or since the first of the year, palm oil prices have risen roughly about 30%, and this is on top of 2006, in which palm oil prices rose, I think it was like 40%. You know, we have really got a very strong hot bean oil market or veg oil market, and the real key here is how high do prices really need to go to finally start curtailing demand, and it's coming from the food sector and this industrial/biofuel sector, too.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
You know, it's watch the weather, man. That's the key to the game right here, right now. And be prepared. Volatility is going to be high.
All right. We appreciate you much.
Good talking to you.
Thank you. Dale Durkles is with AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Somebody from that office joins us each and every Thursday afternoon. At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Pete Levitt. Our own Mike Sola says a wind advisory is in effect for all of Illinois and much of Indiana today and tonight. A tornado watch in effect for extreme northwestern Illinois. That until 10 o'clock tonight. Tonight in north central Illinois and northwestern Indiana, skies will be mostly cloudy, a few thunderstorms. Some strong to severe storms are likely. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy. Lows will range from 60 in the north to 72 in southern parts of Illinois. And tomorrow in the northern and central sections of Illinois, some lingering showers and possibly a few thunderstorms early, and then mostly sunny. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy, showers, thunderstorms diminishing by late afternoon. Highs ranging from 73 in northwestern Illinois to 86 in the far south. Dave Dickey's here now.
In agricultural news, Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says the Senate is likely to approve a cap on producer payments for Farm Bill 2007, somewhere in the $200,000 to $275,000 range, down from the current limit of $360,000. Harkin also says the Senate will close loopholes that allow some producers to exceed payment limits. Meanwhile, House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says just over 10% of farmers have operations of fewer than 10 acres, and thus are, in his words, not real farmers. Peterson says they should be excluded from federal farm programs, saving the government $2.4 billion. A leading auto industry group is decrying a federal draft energy policy that would require improvements in fuel efficiency and production of more cars that run on clean fuels like ethanol and biodiesel. The Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers says increasing the fuel efficiency presents major challenges, requiring investments of over $1 billion to develop a new engine, transmission, and/or new vehicle that is not based on an existing platform. The House draft proposal would increase fuel efficiency standards by more than 30% for cars and 35% for light trucks. Lawmakers want USDA to redefine what rural means. Yesterday, the Specialty Crops, Rural Development, and Foreign Agriculture Committee called on USDA to redefine rural. Chairman Mike McIntyre.
These are additional factors that we feel should be considered, such as I've already mentioned, the density of the population of the area, the fluctuation in seasonal population, whether or not that affects whether this is truly a rural area, and also taking into consideration the median household income.
The subcommittee also voted to require from USDA a comprehensive strategy to boost rural access to high-speed internet services and renew a USDA technical assistance website and toll-free information line. Indiana has two new agricultural programs. The Corn Checkoff Bill will collect a half cent on each bushel of corn at the first point of sale, raising approximately $3 million annually for corn research and promotion. Up to 25% of the total amount collected in the corn marketing development account will be used for a retail tax credit and to promote the availability of E85 fuel. The bills were signed into law yesterday. An Ohio State University study says using corn stover for ethanol feedstock instead of leaving it in the ground may be harmful to the soil and dangerous for future growing seasons. The OSU study says removing more than 25% of corn stover leads to rusting, compaction, runoff, erosion, a decrease in soil moisture and nutrients, and an adverse impact on carbon. And a monthly report from the China National Grain and Oils Information Center is projecting that PRC farmers will produce 3.2% less soybeans this year and 1% more corn. The center projects 2007 corn output to rise to 147 million metric tons and soybean output to fall to 15 million metric tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to tune in Saturday morning at 11:30 Central Time for that show. Our guest this week, Tommy Schuff, independent trader at the CBOT. That's Commodity Week at 11:30 Saturday mornings right here on the radio station. If you can't wait, you can always pick it up after 5 o'clock on Friday evening Central Time at willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, up next, this week, soybean futures rallied to new contract highs. We'll have some analysis of that market with ag economist from the University of Illinois, Daryl Good. The last time soybeans rallied to new contract highs was in mid-February of this year. The U of I Extension Ag Economist Daryl Good pondered then if the high might have come too early in the season and suggested soybeans could rally again sometime later in the year.
My thought at that time was probably, but most likely, as we get into the heart of the growing season and we worry a bit about the crop. But the new highs have come really relatively early, late May, early June, and not so much driven by supply concerns, but more on the demand side of the equation.
Well, the supply side says the market should not need to rally, says Daryl Good. While the U.S. has planted fewer acres of soybeans this year, the South Americans just finished a record-setting soybean harvest. So, for the near term, Daryl Good says supplies seem to be pretty ample. But it's not the supply side of the market that has spurred the recent rally.
This whole rally in soybeans that really started in October has been carried for the most part by soybean oil. We've seen oil prices increase almost 50% since their lows in October. And again, it's not so much because we have a shortage of soybean oil. In fact, we've been carrying record inventories of soybean oil. But worldwide, we're seeing a real rush to biodiesel. Palm oil is being consumed at a very rapid pace. Palm oil prices moving to record highs. In Europe, rapeseed being used for biodiesel. So the whole demand for vegetable oils has kind of pushed soybean oil prices much higher, even though we don't have a shortage of soybean oil at this point.
Importantly to the whole soy complex and the price of soybeans, Daryl Good says on this leg up, soybean meal has rallied too. When the price of corn settled back below $4, it seems the domestic livestock industry decided it could continue to produce profits and started to purchase primary feed ration inputs, including soybean meal.
Taken all together, this is pushing soybean prices higher a little earlier than we thought. We've, in fact, rallied, if we look at November futures, rallied almost a dollar from the lows we've seen recently. It looked like, and we commented at the time, looked like November beans were headed for about the 720 area. They dropped down to about 750, and then we saw a major reversal, and we've added a little over a dollar to that price since then.
A dollar in the futures market, but not in the cash market. It tells Daryl Good that speculative money has moved into the soybeans, most likely on the idea that biodiesel will become the fuel of choice for Europe in the near future. Still, the University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist says the rally to new contract highs in late May, early June, gives him pause to consider where the next step might be. Possibly $9, he says, should the weather appear not to cooperate with the growing season. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson and Morris at 815-941-3751. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
On this Thursday afternoon, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me about how soybeans and the cash side has been holding up with this rally as we move through the week.
Well, not very well from strictly a basis standpoint. I mean, the basis on beans are poor and continue to be poor. You get some areas over along the river. I was looking at some stuff yesterday, Peak and Peoria, Spring Valley. You're up in the 65 to 70 under levels over there for cash beans. And I know I've been dealing with some 70 to 75 under levels over in the Galesburg, between the rivers over in Galesburg, Monmouth, that area over there. So the price, the futures go up and the basis continues weakening. It's kind of what we've been seeing on the beans. And I think from a farmer viewpoint, you get to those kind of levels, maybe you have to look at some alternatives, but maybe you just, close your eyes and make the cash sales too at these kind of price levels.
What is a normal basis for soybeans in your part of the world?
Well, I would say that typically for old crop beans like this time of the year, mm-hmm. we would probably be somewhere in that 10 to 20 under area this time of the year under the July. And currently we're about 35 under. In this area, 30 to 35 under.
Is it that Brazil has taken that much of the marketplace? Is it domestically that we just have that? I mean, beans on hand. What?
I think we just have. I mean, we know that we have twice as many beans as we've typically had this time of year, or five times more beans than what we had a couple of years ago
that's
at
right,
this time of the year.
And
that's what it is. And you get into this June period a lot of times with the July 1st cash flow needs. You see a lot of beans move during this June period, too.
What are your bids for the day?
366 on the corn, 797 on beans.
We appreciate it much.
Thanks, Don.
Yep, Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Pete Levitt, ag meteorologist, about the weather forecast for the globe. Right now, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Illinois lawmakers left the state capitol today, despite the governor's call for them to spend at least 5 days a week working on a new budget. The House adjourned until Tuesday. The Senate went home for a full week until next Thursday. The Senate's adjournment came as a surprise. President Emil Jones had recently said the Senate would be in session every day. Governor Blagojevich wants lawmakers to stay in Springfield. He's been criticizing the House for planning to meet only 3 days a week. but there's little for rank-and-file lawmakers to do until the governor and top lawmakers negotiate a budget agreement. Senate Majority Leader Debbie Halverson says it's a waste of time for rank-and-file lawmakers to spend every day in Springfield when they have work to do in their own districts. A man has now been arrested after SWAT team members tried to serve a search warrant this morning at a Champaign home. But a second man whose refusal to come out of the house led to the standoff has been released without charges. Police say they saw a woman being hit with a paintball bullet yesterday or early Tuesday morning. This morning's incident lasted about an hour after police tried to serve a search warrant in connection with that case. Nobody was hurt. 24-year-old Blake Schroeder was arrested on an aggravated battery charge. Police say the second man will not be charged. It appears plans for a Branson-like resort development in southern Illinois are on hold. Democratic State Representative Dan Reitz of Steelville says he put the brakes on the plan, which involved a land swap deal so environmental groups could study it. The founder of a Terre Haute museum dedicated to the Holocaust says any more visits she makes to Auschwitz will include classroom teachers. Ava Kaur says she'll escort the first group of teachers to the former Nazi concentration camp this weekend. Kaur herself survived the Holocaust. She said she was prompted to make the trip by comments made last year by the president of Iran, who called the Holocaust a myth. The National Safety Council says New Mexico had the highest accidental death rate and Massachusetts the lowest. Illinois, meanwhile, was among states with the lowest accidental death rates in the nation in 2003, the most recent year of data analyzed by the council for the report that was released yesterday. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
It's Thursday afternoon, June the 7th. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason, your host. We're joined by meteorologist Pete Levitt to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast in the Midwest and around the globe. Hi, Pete.
Hi. Good afternoon, Todd.
It's hot and windy here.
Yes, it is, but we're going to see quite a bit of change over the next 24 hours. It's gotten up into the 90s throughout central and northeastern Illinois, and the winds are gusting to over 30 to 35 miles per hour, really breezy, and we expect that to increase a bit even later this afternoon.
And then as we get on to the evening hours?
When the trouble starts. We've got an intense low-pressure system over northeastern South Dakota, which is moving northeastward, but it will propel a front preceded by a squall line across Iowa, which should start to show some thunderstorms developing late this afternoon. They'll reach the Mississippi River Valley probably late this evening, maybe about 7 to 8 p.m., and then come working across northern and central Illinois. Showers, thunderstorms, some locally severe thunderstorms are likely. I don't think much in the way of hail with these storms, but just gusty winds, a lot of lightning, and some briefly heavy rain. And that should be crossing central Illinois and the Champaign-Urbana area probably after midnight, maybe 1 to 2 a.m., and then it'll be moving on to the east.
Tie things down because we've got winds, what, 50 to 70 miles an hour, maybe?
Yeah, there may be few of those in there. It'll be hard to distinguish whether there'll be thunderstorm winds or gradient winds. Right now you're seeing gradient winds in the absence of storms. The good news is that when the front goes by tonight, things will clear out fairly rapidly toward morning, and we look for really nice weekend weather tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday. Temperatures quite a bit cooler, only getting up into the maybe upper 70s to low 80s tomorrow, and then warming up a little bit on Monday and Tuesday, and then some warm frontal activity starts to develop later next week when we see some warmer temperatures, and then the chance of showers again later next week. So we're in one of these cyclical patterns of a few days of pleasant weather and a brief spell maybe of showery weather and all kinds of activity during the next week or so.
Maybe we better get one agricultural question in, because we've seen a lot in the press over the last 12, 13 hours, I suppose, about the weather being fairly warm and no rainfall over the next couple of weeks. I take it you disagree with that.
Oh, yeah, I disagree with that. I'm still not in the drought-mongering phase there, Todd. I think we're going to see plenty of precipitation right through the balance of this month. If there's a pattern change, and I don't think there necessarily has to be one, it won't occur till the end of the month. Until then, I think we can look for episodes of showers, and some pretty healthy showers are due to come into the western Corn Belt again later next week and eventually work their way into the eastern Corn Belt. So we're not going to see anything drying out. We're going to see adequate moisture, at least in most areas. And the other thing we're not looking at is any sustained heat in this pattern. There's just too much action going on to sustain heat very long. And so it looks like normal-type temperatures and with variations.
We appreciate it much.
My pleasure.
Hey, Pete Leavitt joins us each and every Thursday afternoon here on the Closing Market Reports. Thanks for being with us for the last half hour. Be sure again to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets with Dave Dickey, our Director of Agricultural Programming. He'll return at about 10 to 10 with the opening market report and then some updates during the day, and I'll be back during the afternoon at 2:06 with the Closing Market Report. We'll record Commodity Week at 4:30 tomorrow afternoon. You can pick it up off our website at willag.org after 6 tomorrow night, or hear it at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday morning. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good afternoon.